Well, good morning. I'm Representative Dave Pinto. I'm the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, and I'm calling this meeting of the committee to order. This meeting is being held pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual meetings of this type. And members of the public, if you're watching, want to direct your attention to our committee website, where you'll see an agenda and various supporting documents and that kind of thing. So check that out. And Mr. Dozlin, if you could please take the roll to start us out.
Morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Representative Daphne.
Daphne, present.
Representative Damuth. Representative Damuth. Representative Juergens.
Juergens, present.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Representative Wasluwick.
Wasluwick, present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Thank you. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dozlin, and thanks all for being here. I see Representative Damuth. You are here, correct?
My apologies. I'm present, and I think I have my audio issues corrected.
Gotcha. Okay, good. No, thank you.
Good stuff. Thank you, Representative Damuth. Glad to have you here. So we're going to get our minutes dealt with first. So, Representative Pryor, if you wouldn't mind moving approval of our minutes from the March 10th meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And any members, any additions or corrections to those minutes? So not hearing any. All in favor of approval of our minutes from March 10th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so that motion passes and our March 10th minutes are approved. I think Representative Pryor. So members, our first bill up today is House File 3861 from Representative Bolden. And Representative Bolden, I think you're moving this bill to bring it before the committee. The plan is to have it be for possible consideration in a budget bill. Is that your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
Okay, and then Representative Bolden, you have an author's amendment. I don't know if it makes sense to simply adopt that first. Why don't we do that? Looks like it's just a couple of date changes, is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. This was, you're right, just moving the date back a little bit on the advice of DHS.
Okay, and so Representative Bolden, and you are moving the A1 amendment. I guess I should verify that.
Yes, correct.
Okay, and members, is just a couple date changes. Any questions or comments about the motion? And not hearing any, all in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes. So we've got Representative Bolden's bill in the form that she wishes. And so Representative Bolden, please present your bill.
Thank you. So good morning, Chair Pinto and members. I'm very happy to be presenting this bill before you this morning that would change the lives of thousands of Minnesota families and children for the better. Currently, the Minnesota financial eligibility restrictions for families to qualify for the Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP, are extremely limiting. Entrance into the program is limited to families with 47% of state median income or lower. This means that a family of three making $45,000 a year cannot qualify for the program. It also means Minnesota ranks behind Kansas, Mississippi, Missouri, California, and many other states that have raised the income limits to 85% of state median income. What this bill would be to raise that cap to the federal limit of 85% of state median income to ensure more families could access the program and not have to choose between finding a job or getting a raise and paying for childcare. Children's Assistance currently works for very low income families by reducing their out-of-pocket costs to small biweekly co-payments. For most families making between $45,000 to $55,000 a year, that would now be newly eligible under this bill. Their out-of-pocket costs would go from about 20 to 25% of their income down to about 5 to 7% of their income. The total cost for a family's child care co-payment would not exceed 14% of their income. That means more income for food, housing, transportation, and medical expenses. also would be closer in line to the federal recommendation of that 7% of family income that we would like to get to. This is a simple but powerful bill with two sections. Section one changes the cap to 85%, as I mentioned, and section two creates a new category of co-payments for the newly eligible families, capped at 14% of gross income for a family making 67% SMI. So I have a couple of testifiers, but before I turn it over to them, I want to highlight just a couple parts of Victoria Bierke's story that you can find in your packets and posted on the committee website. I strongly encourage you to read the whole letter where she details the agonizing conversations and decisions she had to make in order to afford childcare. Those include foregoing her education and a better paying job and remaining at a fast food restaurant while her kids received critical early education. It even meant talking with her husband about the possibility of a divorce to make the finances for childcare actually work. Simply put, no family should face these untenable options, and this bill would go a long way to making childcare affordable to more Minnesotan families. So Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to turn it over to the testifiers now.
Thank you, Representative Bowman. Your first testifier on my list is Ms. Schillinger. And so if you can please identify yourself, you can unmute and identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hello, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Amanda Schillinger, and I am the director of Pumpkin Patch Childcare and Learning Centers in Burnsville. I am testifying today in support of HF 3861 because I know firsthand from working with families in my centers how they and thousands of families like them would be significantly helped if they could qualify for childcare assistance. We have approximately 96 families enrolled in our programs, and 45 of those currently receive childcare assistance. However, the number of families struggling to afford childcare is so much larger than that. We've had at least 20 families who have either left our program or have considered leaving because they could no longer afford childcare. Approximately 30% of the people who call for enrollment information decide not to enroll only because they can't afford childcare. This is because currently the childcare assistance income limit is far too low for the families who are struggling to make ends meet. One family who attends our program and lives paycheck to paycheck like many in our community, but she makes just too much to qualify for childcare assistance. After missing a lot of work because of a string of illnesses in her household, she was left struggling to figure out how she would afford childcare and her other bills. But she needed her childcare in order to return to work. I also had a parent share both her excitement and her worry when she was offered a promotion at work. She was worried because the promotion would push her off of childcare assistance, but the pay increase was not enough to cover the cost of childcare if she had to pay it solely on her own. It's a story I've heard from many parents over the past 20 years. If the income cap on CCAP eligibility was raised to the 85th percentile, it would allow so many more families to access our center while paying affordable co-pays closer to 5 to 14% of their income. I urge you to pass HF 3861 and give these families an option for affordable, high-quality childcare. Thank you for considering this vital change to our childcare assistance program, and thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions members of the committee may have.
Ms. Schillinger, thanks for being with us, and thanks for your important work for kids. We appreciate it. We have Ms. James here as the next testifier. Yep, and if you can just identify yourself and then proceed. Welcome.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair of the committee. My name is Therese James. I'm a mother of three children, 3, 11, and 18. I work at the kitchen manager in a childcare center at this moment. This allows me to combine my previous work in the restaurant industry and my life dream of working with childcare. It is incredibly important for parents like me to have access to quality childcare, because if I didn't have childcare assistance, I simply couldn't work. Having the support plays a major role in my return to work after having my youngest child, who was born 2 months early. I wanted my child to be somewhere where I knew he would flourish the first few days of his life. Constantly having to think about losing my childcare gave me anxiety. Like, I've had times in my life where I worried about the next raise would mean losing my childcare assistance. I belong to an online mommy's group, and we talk about that all the time. Like, do I risk a raise or losing my childcare? Last year, I had my annual redetermination for childcare assistance, and that came at the perfect time because that was a time where it was the holiday season, and then that means my hours were reduced. So if my hours were reduced and I have less pay, my copay didn't go up. And I actually felt lucky to make less money at that time. I felt lucky because that meant that my childcare assistant copay wouldn't go up. I shouldn't have to worry about my son's ability to stay in childcare and my job to depend on if my determination falls at the perfect time. I shouldn't be relieved if my pay goes down because this still means the eligibility for childcare assistant copay would go up and down every time I have to do my returnation. Current income limits doesn't reflect the reality of childcare costs, and a small raise doesn't come close to covering the expenses of losing childcare. I don't want to have to worry about these things no more because being a working parent is stressful enough, and me having to lose my childcare assistance, that means I won't be able to work and provide for my family. And so I think raising would help the family for us to get our childcare, and then having it 14% would make a big difference for me. Thank you, guys.
Ms. James, thank you for sharing your experience. I should say I have a child who was born 2 months early. He's now 17. He's taller than I am and bigger than I am.
Yeah, he's turning three this year, and it's like
good stuff.
You'll never know yet. So it's
good stuff.
Those premature babies, you can't tell anymore. They are a force to be reckoned with.
That they sure are. Well, and then also sharing your experience. The thought that you'd have to be hoping and be happy that your hours are reduced and you have less money coming in to pay for the things your kids need, and which then allows you to have childcare, which then you can afford that. But then
in the childcare field and then having childcare assistance, because I tell them all the time, thank God for childcare assistance. Like, it makes a big difference in my family.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for sharing that experience. I think Representative Bolden, I think those are your two testifiers. So I think we are ready for questions and comments, members. And I'll note that we have folks from DHS who are on the line with us if there are questions for them. And I'll just look and see if there are hands that are raised. And as I'm waiting, I'll just ask Ms. Mock if you can just talk about just to be sure we're really clear about the different income limits here, 67% is currently what the child care assistance program goes up to in terms of income eligibility. This would go up to 85%, which I think is the federal limit. Can you just help us understand what those differences in income limits are?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, you're correct. So current eligibility, the cap is 67% of state median income, which is about $75,000 for a family of four. So this bill would raise that to 85% of state median income, which is the federal limit, and that's about $96,000 for a family of four.
Thank you. And then could you also just, this is perhaps, maybe you can confirm how the copays work, that currently the limit is up to 14% of income. What determines what those percentages are, if you know, Ms. Mock? Like, that's sort of an upper limit. Is it just a straight 14% or sort of how does that work? And all the reason for the question, but if you could just describe that.
Yes, so currently it's a sliding scale that starts at, for families that have income below 100% of the federal poverty level, it's a flat dollar amount payment. And then starting at the federal poverty level up until, under current law, 67% of state median income, it's a sliding scale as a percentage of income. It starts at 2.61% of income and goes up to 14%. For families with income between 64 and 67 state median income, it's 14% of their highest dollar amount. This new group that is being included under this bill, so families with income above 67% of state median income, up to 85% of state median income, the family copay would also be 14%, but it would be based on the lowest possible income in their range.
And then the final question for me, for you, Ms. Mock, is the federal standard of how much is it makes what is affordable for families is 7% of their income, and with the rest of 93% going to other things. Is that correct? And can you just make sure I'm understanding that right?
Yes, it is that's also my understanding that that is what the federal government recommends, 7%. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Representative Pryor, you have your hand raised.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I kind of want to continue with the questioning that you raised just so that we understand how these percentages of copay and percentage of medium income, kind of how they work together and impact families. So I'd like to understand a little bit better about kind of this cliff that parents have when they no longer qualify, currently, when they no longer qualify for childcare assistance. So when you're at 68% and before you were paying 14% of your salary, you were paying 14% of the copay was what the cap was. And then when you're on the other side of that 67%, when you're at 68%, 70%, what does that mean in terms of what you owe then for childcare assistance? So I'm thinking like when you're on the other side of the cliff, you know, you're off, you're no longer getting any childcare assistance right now. What percentage of your salary then would you be paying in for your child care payments?
Ms. Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pryor. So if you are not receiving any child care assistance and not receiving assistance from any other source, then families pay the entire amount for child care. And, you know, what percentage of that income it is, I don't have an average number in front of me. It'll vary according to the type of, the expense of the child care and the family's mm-hmm. income.
Mm-hmm. Representative Pryor.
And maybe Ms. James could tell me like a real world example of what it might have looked like for her if her hours had not been reduced and if she had had to just jump right in and was no longer qualifying and had to absorb the whole cost.
James?
So I can tell you guys. So right now I'm considered a family of four with myself and my three children, but my oldest actually just went on to college in August. So he was pulled from my income level. And if I didn't have my redetermination in December with him being gone, that would have actually taken me off my childcare cap. Because mm-hmm. Because it would have been him going to college, like I said, that's a family of three. So I would barely just made the limit for the childcare assistant.
Right.
With him being off the fence, I think.
And would I, could
you, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you give me, Ms. James, just like a rough idea of if you had lost that childcare assistance, how much your payments would have been if you had to pay the whole cost?
So
James.
Yes, my three-year-old, he's right now, he's considered a preschool and then it'd been like about $400 for my weekly payment.
Wow.
James,
I think he would have been working for free if I had to pay that
Ms. James is going to ask, of that $400, if you don't mind my asking, like roughly, sounds like that's essentially 100% of your income.
Yes, I would be basically working for free because I also work where he goes to the daycare. So I would be just, working for free.
Yeah.
Because that money would have been for him going to school.
Thank you. Representative Pryor.
Thanks for Ms. James. Thanks for helping us with the numbers.
You are welcome.
From
the heart.
All right.
I would have been just here as a mom and him just going to school while I just pay his full tuition. So childcare is close to my heart.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. James, and thank you, Representative Pryor. Representative Juergens is up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first off, my question was going to be about a sliding scale, but Ms. Mock explained that before I could ask my question, so I appreciate that. My question is, it looks like there's not a fiscal note attached to this bill, and I'm wondering if you can help us understand or re-explain, maybe I missed it, the funding sources for this. Where does the money come from?
I believe it would come, Representative Juergens, from from the general fund plus the federal child care development block grant. Maybe Mr. Berg is on, so he'll be able to help us with this, Mr. Juergens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Juergens, I think the chair is correct. I just was going to say there is a pending fiscal note request, right. Okay. But I think the chair characterized it correctly. It would be some combination of federal child care funds and state general funds.
And Representative Juergens, to remind you, and the bill's being laid over, so this is there will be a chance for us to, you know, as we build a spending bill, that we'll have that information at that point. But Representative Juergens, please continue.
No, that was it. That answered my question. Thank you, Mr. Berg, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thanks, Representative Juergens. Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. I just have a couple concerns. We are going from 67%. To 85% of the what I understand the federal max. And I'm not sure if a lot of people know that making almost six figures, you're still qualified for child care assistance is maybe a good thing. And I'm just concerned about the optics if this will do going to the maximum on the federal amount. And still, while we're still not comfortable with some of the things that have happened in the past, as far as improprieties and fraud, we've been talking about that for a couple of years. So I just don't know if it's the right time and the right optics to do this. I'd like to see a little more finalizing of the investigation get done first. I think the minimum should be raised, but I'm not sure going from the minimum to the maximum is probably the wisest choice. But I say this will be laid over. Maybe we can have some further discussion, and maybe the author will be willing to do amendment, possibly, and appease everybody. My final comment, and I don't really have a question in all this. My final comment is there are several DFL authors on the House side, and two, I believe, on the DFL side, and I really wish we could work in more bipartisanship. So that would be another optic to the public that we're actually working together, not just trying to push a certain agenda through. So those are my comments. I'm a little concerned about how we're doing this, and I appreciate the time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Daniels. Just a couple things to the point about the concerns about program integrity, just a reminder that we've had now really since 2019, you know, this series of presentations and significant changes that have gone on in the agency. And I think, and I'll say, Representative Daniels, if you or others have further questions for DHS about kind of what's been going on in program integrity for this program, please speak up and let's bring them back on in. But I'll say that, you know, that was now coming up on, you know, it'll get to be 3-4 years ago. 3 years ago, I guess, at this point, and we really had a lot of work that's been done there. So I know that has been an ongoing discussion, but I think members of this committee have been quite impressed with that. I take that point, and maybe we'll get to a couple other things as well. I see we've got Chair. Oh, I'm sorry, I guess not other questions on that. I did want to clarify with Ms. Mock the point about the sliding scale, because I think I may have asked a wrong question earlier. The 67% is the rate at redetermination. In order to even get CCAP at all right now, you have to be down at the 47% or down at a much lower percentage. Is that correct? Can you just explain how it works for somebody to actually get access to this program, Ms. Mock? I feel like I may have messed that up.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So it's 67% if you're a family receiving MFIP. That's the income eligibility at application for a family receiving MFIP. If you're a family receiving basic sliding fee, the income eligibility at application is 47% of state median income. And then at redetermination for all families, it's 67% of state median income.
All right, thank you, Ms. Mock. I'll note, Representative Daniels, to your comment as well, that occurred to me is that we've been hearing so much testimony over the past couple of years about how families really quite far up the income level are extremely squeezed by childcare costs. And then the impact that's having on employers and it's having on communities all around the state. And I think about the Greater Minnesota presentation we had a couple weeks ago. So to a certain extent, I guess I would think that that's part of the point of this, is to say that even up to 85% of state aid income, which is below the middle, families are really, really squeezed. But I definitely take your point, and this is an ongoing conversation. Looking to see if there are other hands, and not seeing any at this point. So Representative Bolden, we'll go to you for whatever closing comments you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for really good discussion. I want to just reiterate my thanks to the testifiers for sharing your stories. I think it painted a really good picture of the really difficult position that many Minnesota families are in that middle section, who are not, making a little too much to qualify for the program, yet still not able to, afford the child care that they need. And so I think it is always the right time to all we can to support families and our little ones. And I'm happy to work with anyone who would like to join me in that work, and certainly happy to have further conversations about this. So thank you for the time today.
Hey, Representative Bolden, and please do take up the suggestions for connecting and looking at ways we can help families to address these needs for early care and learning. And of course, we know when we provide that for kids, it's a huge payoff too, as we've heard so much in our committee. So thank you so much. So with that, the chair lays over House File 3861 for possible inclusion in a committee budget bill. Next, we have a couple of bills from Representative Cagle, who I believe is here. So Representative, there you go. I'll ask the Vice Chair, Representative Pryor, to move House File 3981 and bring that before the committee, if I can.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 3981 to be before the committee.
All right, and members, this bill too is up for possible inclusion in a budget bill. You have an A2 author's amendment, Representative Cagle, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and so Representative Pryor asks you to move that as well, if you can.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And Representative Cagle, anything that we need to know in particular about the A2?
The A2 is an amendment I worked on with MDE and Ms. Arroyo, sorry, could probably explain it best. It's just kind of a melding of our two bills. So it removes one of there was a section 4, I believe, it eliminated. Is that correct?
I think we might do is why don't we get a description of the bill just in general, so we're all clear on what that is. I know we do these author's amendments to put the bill in the shape the author wishes, and it seems like it's good for members to know what we're doing. So not sure, Representative Cagle, if you can give a brief description of the bill, or if we want to turn to Ms. Arriola, whatever works.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 3981 is a bill that just kind of corrects some statute around who gets breakfast at school. And so right now, if you are in a voluntary pre-K program, you can get breakfast. If you are in a early childhood special education program, you can get breakfast. But if you're in both, you can't. And so this is just correcting that language.
And maybe Ms. Arriola can just explain the A2 amendment, so we'll get that, make that happen, if you can.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to provide overarching comments about the bill with the A2, or just start with the A2 and then I can speak to the bill?
I'm thinking my staff is going to be happy if we can get past the A2 and get that added. So if you can just explain what that is,
that would be great. Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and thank you to Representative Cagle for being willing to take on our A2 amendment. We also had a similar proposal that we were drafting with the reviser as Representative Cagle was. The only difference was our proposal eliminated an oversight in calculation of pupil ADM in the same statute that we believed was necessary to eliminate to ensure that kindergartners receiving special education services are also are able to generate the same average daily membership as their non-disabled peers, who only have to receive a lower amount of hours to generate membership. So I know that that's not necessarily in the jurisdiction of this committee. However, it is also in the governor's budget bill. So that portion will be heard in education finance, just to reassure members. And the other change in the amendment was that we included the citation, the federal citation to the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act. The original text had stated that this was in alignment with that. However, we wanted to just make sure that that exact federal statute was cited in the bill.
Excellent. Thank you. So so members, okay, I think we probably had a good discussion here. So Representative Pryor, I think we had not had you move the A2. So if you could please do that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I moved the A2.
All right, thank you. And then any further discussion about the A2, which we just had that description? Not hearing any. So all in favor of approval of the A2 author's amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, so that motion passes. And so Representative Cagle, we got a general orientation to your bill, but now we should do your formal bill presentation and Ms. Ariella say whatever she wants to.
Well, that was my, Mr. Chair, that was my formal bill presentation. We are just, it's not very difficult. We just want to make sure that the kiddos get breakfast in the morning. And so this is just really making sure that we fix that oversight so that kids who need to eat in the morning can.
Excellent. And then Ms. Ariola, please describe anything further you want to about the bill.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and committee members. For the record, my name is Megan Ariola, and I'm the legislative coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you again for allowing me to testify on behalf of the department and provide supportive comments on HF 3981, which, as I mentioned, we are also carrying in the governor's supplemental budget bill. This bill is necessary because currently early childhood special education students, or ECSE students, as you might hear them referred to, do not have access to some of the same supports and programs that peers in their classrooms without disabilities do have access to. In addition, as I mentioned, kindergartners with disabilities have to have more hours of instruction in order to generate the same education revenue as their non-disabled peers. First, this proposal is crucial because currently ECSE students in voluntary pre-K programs do not generate school breakfast aid, nor do ECSE students generate English learner aid. HF 3981 and the governor's bill makes it so the ECSE students do generate that same aid. To be clear though, ECSE students aren't being denied breakfast at the moment when they need it. What is happening is that schools and districts are unsure of how to properly bill and be reimbursed for providing breakfast to these students. Second, in 2013, there were statutory changes around pupil unit calculations. Unfortunately, a disparity that was included required kindergartners with a disability to receive 875 hours of instructions to generate the same ADM as their non-disabled peers who only have to receive 850 hours of instructions. That result is those students generating less special ed revenue. Simply put, this amendment, which I'm happy that the committee adopted, and the governor's bill and HF 3981 fix this disparity. This is a very common sense solution that schools have been begging us to resolve for years. It's a very small fix, but as I've mentioned, schools have been just forced to eat this cost, pun intended, around ECSE students receiving breakfast. Thank you for allowing me the time to comment on this bill, and I stand ready for questions.
Thank you so much. So we're getting little kids breakfast. Seems like a very good thing to do. Any questions about this, members, or comments that anybody has? Representative Damon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the bill author, thank you for bringing this forward. Just more of a comment rather than an actual question. While this is an important issue, we know that the VPK programs are actually susceptible when there's a teacher strike. And I guess my thought right now is, our VPK kids in Minneapolis, how are they being fed? Are they getting meals? We go back to February or early March of 2020, pre-pandemic, which seems a lot longer ago. And we know that St. Paul schools were on strike. So maybe more of just a comment, this program can suffer during a strike. I'm assuming those VPK classrooms are empty right now. And I think that's just a note to take and for the committee to consider as we look forward in pushing the program forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Damon. I think you may have revoked a couple hands. I see Chair Davi, we'll call on you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Damon, thank you for the concern for the littles in Minneapolis right now. The school district is providing food service to all students actually in the city right now. They can receive, they can pick up a breakfast and a lunch every day from their schools. So that has been, that concern has been anticipated and responded to. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney, Chair Dabney, for clarifying that. Representative Katiza Witun, I saw your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a comment about how important it is to make sure that all of our kids are fed. I mean, we've had this conversation about, of course, right now, students K-12 are eligible for lunches by the federal government because of COVID, but we've had this discussion ongoing for years about actually, using state dollars to make sure that kids are not going hungry at school. It's really hard to function as an adult with a fully functioning frontal cortex. You know, supposedly I'm supposed to have control over my hunger pains, but it's very difficult, to potentially sit through a committee meeting or a meeting with a constituent or to go out and just run errands as an adult when I'm hungry. And so to think that there are little kids who haven't learned some of the coping mechanisms that maybe we have spent our whole lives learning and having to deal with just keeping our hunger abated. And then to add on that they're facing some additional learning challenges in the special ed programming. How difficult it would be for them to continue on with their day if they didn't have food in their bellies. So thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this bill.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Witun. Yeah, and I'll highlight, because I've been looking at this and just want to urge members, if anyone's interested in looking further, there's the farm-to-school program that I think we would be good to expand to early care and learning settings. And Representative Damuth, you referenced BPK as one particular approach to early learning and care. But yeah, to have breakfast and food provided in all settings where little kids are being cared for and are learning. I would just love to have that in every possible way that we can. So whatever we all can do, because we know that nutrition is critical for early childhood development. I'm just going to ask up Chair Dabney, if you see your hand back up, please, unless it was up from before.
No, just my bad, Mr. Chair. Okay. My apologies. There, no, it's gone now.
No problem. Members, I may have misspoken earlier. There's a little bit of confusion because of how our committee jurisdiction overlaps with others. Ms. Beckel, I don't know if you can hear me from House Fiscal, but I think that this funding, if we do end up having it go through, would go through Chair Dabney's committee, through Education Finance. Ms. Beckel, do you know if that is the case? Because if so, I think we would need to send this to that committee. The language is already in front of that committee, but that way we will have approved the early childhood portion. Ms. Beckel, can you just comment on that?
Chair and members, yes. Currently, with the committee jurisdictions, the school lunch and school breakfast is funded through Chair Dabney's committee.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Beckel. So in that case, members, although the language is before that committee, I think our committee needs to sort of provide provide approval of our portion of it. The final decision on the spending then would come through Chair Dabney's committee. So just a heads up that we will be voting on this after all. My apologies for the confusion. I find it very confusing how it all works. So, all right, any further questions or comments? Not seeing any hands. So, Representative Cagle, we will give you the final word.
It's a good bill, vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. I'm so glad, as Ms. Ariola had highlighted, that this is part of the governor's budget. I'm really happy to highlight it separately, because this is quite a gap to have where kids are not getting breakfast. So with that, Representative Pryor renews her motion. I think Representative Pryor will have you withdraw your motion to simply bring the bill before us and instead move it to be re-referred to Education Finance. Are those your two motions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to withdraw my motion and put forward a new motion. Did you do that one at a time? Yeah. Or?
Yeah, well, so the one is done, I think, and we'll say that if you'll move the House File 3981 as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance.
That is my motion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right. Members, we've had a discussion, so we'll move on to a vote. And Mr. Dozen, if you can please do that.
All right. Representative Pinto, Chair.
Aye.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Aye.
Lead Franzen.
No.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Representative Daniels.
Daniels votes no.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney votes aye.
Representative Daymuth.
No.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, yes.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Cotiza-Watoon, aye.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Wasliwick.
Wasliwick, aye.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes aye.
Results in 9 ayes and 4 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Doslin. So the motion passes and the bill is on its way to Education Finance. Thank you for that. Representative Cagle, then you have another bill up, House File 3513. I'll ask Representative Pryor to move to refer that to the Committee on Health Finance Policy.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. And Representative Cagle, looks like there's no amendment on this bill. It's a lot simpler. So if you can please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So this House File 3513 is a bill that would create a premium assistance program for childcare workers. I am a mom and I'm also on the Workforce Development Committee. And so I know that this is a big issue for our childcare providers not having access to affordable healthcare. And so what this bill would do is it would allow the childcare or the employees to, when they go on to MNsure to purchase their health insurance, if they don't qualify for Minnesota Care or Medicaid and they have a household income of under 300% of federal poverty guidelines, then after all of the tax credits and such on MNsure, then the rest of their premium would be covered through this program. And so it allows for they'd have to be a Minnesota resident and enroll in a silver or gold health plan through MNsure. We see this as a workforce issue because we know that childcare is the workforce behind our workforce. As you can see, I don't have a 3-year-old hanging on me right now. I don't have Paw Patrol going on in the background. And that's because we have wonderful childcare provider that takes care of my kiddo so I can focus on this work. And so I just want to make sure that we are taking care of our childcare providers. With that, I can turn it over to my testifiers. We have Becky and Sharla from Love and Learn Childcare. And then I believe Carla Sapansky is also on the phone to testify. So with that, I'll turn it over to the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Ms. Wojtaszek, I'm not sure if we're starting off with you and if I'm saying your name correctly, but if you can please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, thank you. I am Becky Wojtaszek, part owner of Love and Learn Childcare Academy. We have about 35 employees here. We cannot afford to take and offer healthcare to our employees. We thought about it in December, looked into it, and the cost is so expensive. There's no way that we can afford to offer it to our employees. We are losing staffing because of that. The schools can offer health insurance. Other businesses can offer health insurance. We can only charge our parents so much money, and what comes in is what goes out. We try to pay it out in wages. We already cannot pay our teachers enough for what they're worth. So they are not eligible, you know, to have health care through us. If we did offer it, it would literally take their entire paychecks. They just don't make enough to be able to afford it. We are losing the staff because of it. We also need to be able to employ high quality childcare teachers. The staff here do teach the children, which in many daycares, that's what they're doing. They're not just babysitters. We are teachers. They should be treated like teachers and have health insurance benefits. We have a lot of our teachers that just plain don't have health care. They're around a lot of students that have germs and sicknesses, and they're just trying to fight it off, and they can't afford to go to the doctor. If they get sick, They still try to come into work because they can't afford to take a day off, and they don't have the health insurance to cover it anyways. So health insurance would be a big thing for childcare workers. It really is an important thing to keep our teachers healthy, to be able to take care of the workforce that needs to go out to work.
Thank you so much, Ms. Wojtaszek. I hope I'm saying your name correctly. And for your work, we have Ms. Acharsaheli. I hope I'm saying your name correctly, but you can help me out with that. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sharla Acharsaheli, the other owner at Love and Learn. And just this morning, we had a phone call. We had a teacher that was starting on Wednesday. But she called to tell us that she took a different job because she was offered the full benefits that we cannot offer. We were really excited to have her on board because she had the high qualifications that we are looking for, the education background. And so that really puts us in the bind right now, because the other applicants we're getting, they don't care if they have health insurance because they're not qualified. I mean, they can work in childcare, but they don't have the high quality that we are looking for, because we're taking care of the most prized possession families have, is their children. And so if our staff gets sick and can't be here, our children suffer and our families are suffering. I mean, our staff has worked through the COVID. They came in sick, whatever. They worked, they was considered essential. Now they feel like they're nobody because they can't afford anything. So the quality of the health insurance for these teachers would really help out. And we could start getting in qualified teachers that we need to help take care of our children. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Darsaheli, for your work. And the final testifier, Representative Cagle, I believe is Ms. Sapansky. And so we'll have you come on and unmute and identify yourself and proceed.
Well, good day, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay. Thank you so much for being here today, giving the attention to our childcare providers out in our community that we truly need. They are truly the backbone of our community. Let me introduce myself. My name is Carla Skabansky, and I've been a childcare provider in the greater Minnesota area for about 15 years, raising my children in on our family farm. So with that, my husband carried all the medical insurance and carried the premium on that as I paid all the other expenses. So with that being said, that's the reason why I am sitting in my mail truck right now and took a couple minutes to talk with you folks today. I will be doing this job probably until I'm 70. After running for state office, I assisted in several different center-based programs within the St. Cloud area, holding several teacher positions and hearing that attraction to this profession is failing. Well, and you can imagine, starting wage for me as a licensed teacher was $14.50 an hour, and I have a degree. So you could work at McDonald's for $15, and I was working to take care of our little ones at $14.50. Currently, I teach at the St. Cloud Technical College on the developed DHS platform and as an American Heart Association instructor throughout all of greater Minnesota. I got to tell you, we are a close-knit early child education community, and in these classrooms, educators share the retention issue and how those that forego the low income because they really love children have a difficult time holding on. That was me after 15 years. I truly fear the instability with caregivers on our little learners' mental health. Because of this issue, this makes me very sad. This is why I need to be there for many providers and center directors to continue my support with weekly mandated classes, keeping their team certified as they enjoy the idea that I have walked in their shoes. As an instructor, you can imagine I try to diffuse these stressors providers have in my class safe space. They struggle with trying to continue for many reasons, but truly the bottom line is the financial stability, trying to keep themselves healthy with very expensive healthcare. Providers are expected by parents and employers to be available Monday through Friday all day, and many parents do not have a backup plan. Yet the pandemic, now the teachers strike, and the growing mental health issues that we see now and going on with all these, we see what's happening because we're not investing in early childhood. Thank you so much for your time. I'm willing to answer any questions, but right now I got to load my truck and get out there and deliver mail. Have a good day.
Thank you, Ms. Skabansky. Thanks for joining us and for your testimony. I think that's it in terms of questions. I know there's we have some folks on who are for testimony, pardon me. We have some folks on available for questions. But Representative Wasilewicz, I see you've got your hand raised, so please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this bill forward. I just wanted to note when the Family Child Care Task Force did essentially commissioned a survey of providers who had closed their businesses, lack of benefits such as health insurance was actually the top business factor that had a high impact on decisions to close these childcare businesses. So I just wanted to point that out. That was something that I distinctly remember from our conversations around family childcare as well on the task force, was that this was a large factor in why these childcare businesses closed. So just wanna raise that as a point that we're seeing this. It's not just childcare centers, it's also family childcare that really sees this as an issue and is finding it hard to afford health insurance. So thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz. Representative Cagle, do you happen to know, or I don't know if we have staff on that does. I see, I'll ask my question after Representative Juergens. So Representative Juergens, please, you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we all know that what a challenge it is for the child care throughout the state, especially in greater Minnesota, and the wages that the daycare providers are able to pay is low. And if they increase the pay, then they have to increase the cost of child care, and it's a dilemma. I understand that. Is this assistance only available to people who purchase health insurance through MNsure, or is it are other programs or other providers also eligible?
Yeah, and I was actually going to ask too more broadly just about the mechanism about how all this works. So, Representative Cagle, if you could address Representative Juergens' question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Juergens, for the question. So, how it would work is you would go into it, you'd have to be purchasing on the private market. So, basically, if you can't get health insurance through your spouse's plan, or they don't offer it at your center, then you go on to the MNsure market. If you don't qualify for Minnesota Care and you are above, so the 200 to 300% federal poverty is really where we're looking at subsidizing. So because they're up to 200%, you'd get those, the rebates and tax credits, but from that 200 to 300, that's the part where we would subsidize it.
Representative Juergens.
Yeah, a little bit. So if someone is employed and they're getting health insurance through their employer, but it's still expensive and it takes up a big chunk of their paycheck, are they eligible for this premium subsidy or premium assistance?
Representative Cagle?
So under the definition, I believe it's as long as they're purchasing on MNsure.
So they do have to go through MNsure.
That Representative Juergens, yeah. I think it sounds like in order to access this, they would purchase through MNsure. Let's just see Representative Cagle nodding there. Yes. Representative Juergens, I don't know if your question quite got answered, though, that if they're currently receiving health coverage through their employer, through their child care employer, well, I'll let you restate it, Representative Juergens, but I'm not sure you fully got an answer to it.
That is a question. It sounds like the answer is no. If a parent is purchasing a daycare provider employee is purchasing their health insurance through an employer, their spouse's employer, for example, they're not eligible for this. They would have to bypass that and buy through the MNsure marketplace. And then they may qualify depending on the other income levels and such.
And I see, Mr. Chair, yeah. I see Ms. Burke is here from MNsure, so she might be able to better explain it.
That is probably a good idea to send it to an expert. So I think Representative Juergens will do that. So Ms. Burke, if you could please identify yourself and then provide some information for us, some insight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Anna Burke. I'm the Government Affairs Manager at MNsure. So we have been providing a little technical assistance to Representative Cagle on this bill. by no means an expert at everything, but I will point out that as far as the eligibility goes, there is a specific line, I believe 2.6, that talks about being ineligible for minimum essential coverage. So you would need to apply through MNsure, select a silver or gold plan, but you would be ineligible if you had access to other minimum essential coverage as defined in federal law.
Representative Juergens, we'll send it back to you.
No, that I'm looking at line 2.6 on the bill right here. So that answers my question. Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Juergens. I think your initial question was sort of, would somebody have to be on MNsure to begin with? And I think if I'm understanding the answers right, it's sort of the opposite, that if you lack health coverage right now, the mechanism to get it for you would be you would go on MNsure. That you'd be able to purchase it through MNsure, pardon me. So hopefully that's helpful, Representative Juergens. I'll send it back to you though. Representative Juergens, is that making sense?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. Thank you.
Okay, good. Yeah, thanks. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question's for the bill author. And Representative Kogel, I don't see a fiscal note. I don't know if I missed that or not, but just curious the costs of this program, something we should know as we're dealing with it.
Yeah, Representative Kogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that there was a fiscal note requested. It looks like the due date is tomorrow.
We'll send it to Mr. Berg, Representative Kogel, if that makes sense to you. We send Mr. Berg, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kogel, there is a request in. I did not actually make that request. It was made by my colleague who handles the Commerce Committee. I'll take your word for it that it's due tomorrow, but we'll have to see when we get it. This, I guess I'm not sure on the path of this bill. This is really a health insurance bill rather than an early ed bill. So thus the fiscal note from the Commerce Committee.
And I'm not sure. So we are sending, the plan is to send this to health. I suppose that the money then would come through Commerce in the end, I'm guessing, since it was the Commerce fiscal staff who requested. Mr. Berg, maybe you could just clarify that.
Probably not. If there are costs in it, I mean, MNsure is a human services account, health and human services account. However, the bill originated in Commerce, which is where insurance matters usually go. So that's why it got started there. This is one of those things where, we got to chase it through the system. There is a fiscal note request in on the bill, so that's all that you guys need to know right now. We'll send it to you when we get it.
And Mr. Chair.
I complain. Oh yeah, Ms. Representative Kogel, please.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bennett. It is a fairly small subset of people too. Washington State has a program similar to this. Theirs is more voluntary, but because we're looking at a small subset of workers between 200 and 300% of federal poverty, it will keep the numbers relatively low, I'm assuming.
And before I call you on Representative Pryor, actually Representative Bennett, I guess you have the floor, so send it back to you and I have something to ask about. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, I guess I'll make a comment. I appreciate hearing this, but I really feel like we should know the fiscal ramifications before voting on this, especially in the tails and so on. That concerns me. So appreciate it, but I would like that information, I guess, before I would consider voting. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. The one thing I'll say about that is just that it is pretty routine, as you know, for bills that relate to a committee's jurisdiction, but are not, I mean, this one is obviously fairly outside of ours. We have a connection to it, that we're sort of saying, hey, as a policy perspective, we agree with it, if we do, but that the fiscal aspect of it ends up being decided in the committee that actually hears that. And that's a pretty standard thing. Obviously, it's up to each of us how we vote, but I'll just make that observation on my part. But Representative Bennett, back to you if you have anything.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And just before I go to Representative Pryor, I just wanted to build on that set of questions just to ask, do we have a sense, Representative Kogel, as to the percentage of childcare workers right now who do have health coverage? Because my sense is it's very low, that it's even under 10% through their employers. Now, they may get it through a spouse, maybe they're under the age 26 through their parents, but do you have a sense of that?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have any solid numbers. I know that when I talk to the ladies at my daycare center that they're all getting health care through either MNsure or Minnesota Care. And, you know, my center is in a metro area, so that, but that's purely anecdotal.
Okay, and I suppose, right, if the income's low enough, then they're getting it through. I do know a huge percentage of childcare employees are on public assistance, so are actually paying for it separately anyway. So, Ms. Schillinger, did you have something you were going to add about that? I wasn't sure if based on your...
Oh, I was just going to say, I know that we can't afford it. We've tried. Right. Privately owned centers struggle with that the most because you're dealing with a smaller pool of employees. So you don't qualify for any of the insurance, the bigger insurance company benefits of getting your employees in on an employee plan. So that's been a big, big struggle for us. And as we're paying teachers more to compete with the general job market, it's pushing them out of MnSure or squeezing them on that as well. We have a number of people, especially if they're single, who are not qualifying for anything through MnSure.
Thank you, Ms. Thank you very much for that. That actually reminds me of the comments from Ms. James on that first bill about how somebody's income rises, now suddenly they lose access to the support that, in this case, to access to healthcare, which is a huge problem. Representative Pryor, we'll go to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just also want to say thank you to Representative Cagle for taking on this bill, because it is complicated. But I appreciate the comments reminding us that we're just talking about this policy of understanding how much what our crisis is in childcare. And part of the crisis is because it's such a challenging job to take on that it's at best, low wages, moving up into, it's very low wages, moving up into just above low wages. So it's not enough that you can actually support a family. And yet the people that would be drawn to this work are people that have children and love children. And so we're kind of saying, if you're perfect for this job, you can't afford to take it because the wages are low and it doesn't have benefits. And the biggest benefit, and I think all of us, when we're thinking about, what our career should be and what makes a good job, is it's not just the salary, but it's also the benefits. And then we also know the other aspect of it is that businesses, when you think of as childcare as a business, it's hard to make it work. You're always on the margin because if you're in a center, you can't charge kind of the value of what you're offering to parents because they can't afford it. You can't pay your workers anymore because of those the low compensation or the low rates that you can have to charge. And then if you're a home, you're trying to do all those things at once. So we come back to it, this is one of those aspects that we have to solve so that we can support our workforce, as Representative Cagle said, the workforce behind our workforce, and having access to healthcare is essential to a person's career. And so this seems like a good solution to make it affordable. The actual aspects of it, of how it works in our current insurance system and MnSure, and that's a great topic for another committee. And some of us are also on that committee, and we can we can struggle through that there. But I think this committee knows how important it is to support the workforce that's taking care of our kids. And this is, I think, a great solution for bringing that forward. So thank you, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. So I'm not seeing other hands at this point. So Representative Cagle, we'll give you the final word on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion around 3513. I really see this as just one small piece of the puzzle when it comes to supporting our childcare workforce. And childcare is expensive. They're not making a ton of money. And we've seen that they're essential. We have to have our childcare providers if we want a thriving economy and Minnesotans to lift themselves up. And so, like I said, this is just one small piece of the puzzle where hopefully we can stabilize and support our childcare workers. So thank you, everybody. And let's get this done. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. And before we vote, members, I'll just note that, we've heard so much about these being the most important teachers, the most important people doing the most important job of society, getting little kids off to a great start. And we also know, as Commissioner Harpstead says, this is the workforce behind the workforce, and yet a significant percentage on public assistance, and quite a small percentage that get healthcare through their jobs, and many then are not in healthcare at all, health coverage. So there'll be discussions about the costs and how this works in other committees, but saying that there is a need for this, to my mind, it certainly seems like there is. So, Mr. Dozland, with that, if you can please take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Aye.
Vice Chair Pryor.
Aye.
Lead Franzen.
No.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Representative Daniels.
Daniels votes no.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney votes aye.
Representative Damuth.
No.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, no.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Cotiza-Watoon, aye.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes aye.
The vote results in 8 ayes and 5 nays. I believe you're muted, Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Dozland. I should have noted, and someone please speak up if you have concerns about this, but that I think it was implied that Representative Pryor had renewed her motion to re-refer House File 3513, and this is all on me, Representative Pryor, to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy. Please speak up. There are concerns about that, but I think it was clear what was going on. That's what we had been discussing, and the motion was before us at the start of this. That motion did pass, and thank you, members, for that discussion. Representative Cagle, you're on your way to Health, Finance, and Policy. We really appreciate you bringing this, and many thanks to your testifiers. Thanks to them. And then, members, House File 2231 is a bill that had been passed out of the committee last year and sent to the General Register. It's a bill of mine, and so I'll hand things over to Vice Chair to preside at this point.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right. Let's see. Where are we? All right. So, Mr. Chair, would you like to move, refer House File 2231 to the General Register?
Yes. So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. So, members, this is a bill that we heard last year, but it was returned to us from the floor at the end of the session. And so this is, Mr. Chair, would you like to describe the bill briefly?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. And so, members, House File 2231, in its text, simply clears up some obsolete language. I'll say candidly that it is what we call a vehicle bill, where if there's a need for it at some point in the course of session, we have it kind of available on the floor. But the substance of the bill itself is to clear up some obsolete language and make our statutes a little bit cleaner.
Mm-hmm. All right. So any questions at this point from members? Seeing none, would you like to renew your motion to refer House File 2231 to the General Register, Mr. Chair?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would. That is my motion. That is my renewing of my motion.
All right. And the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Aye.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Aye.
Lead Franzen.
Yes.
Representative Bennett.
Aye.
Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Representative Daniels.
Aye.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney votes aye.
Representative Damuth.
Aye.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, aye.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Cotiza-Watoon, aye.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz, aye.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes aye.
Thank you. That results in 13 ayes and 0 nays.
All right. By 13 ayes to 0 nays, House File 2231 is referred to the General Register. And with that, I will return the gavel to Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I want to highlight something for our hearing on Thursday. We are going to be hearing a parent aware report that we had ordered last spring from the Department of Human Services. We'll be hearing a couple bills as well. But I would urge members, if you get a chance to take a look at that, it's been sent out to you and members of the public. It's should be posted for Thursday as well. Check it out. Parent Aware is our state's what's called Quality Rating and Improvement System, QRIS. Almost all states have them. And we build a lot around Parent Aware. There's more that we could do and probably should do if Parent Aware is going to be our state's quality system, which it is right now. And we know that there are concerns that folks have. Things can always be improved. And so this is going to be a report and an opportunity to discuss that. And so just would urge members to bring that. We'll have a jam-packed schedule, and that should be good. Members, are there other questions or anything anybody has? Just waiting to see if we have any hands raised. And not seeing any. And so please do check out that Parent Aware report. And with that, I'll plan to see folks on Thursday, and our meeting is adjourned. Many thanks.